Eclipse Aviation shuts down operations. Delta Connection Academy loses a student and an instructor in Florida. And Sirius XM's White Knight arrives in the nick of time. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, February 19th, 2009. Wednesday morning, we started getting reports from sources within Eclipse Aviation telling us the company had suddenly shut down and roughly 800 workers were being furloughed. Wednesday afternoon, Eclipse President and General Manager Mike McConnell officially confirmed that the Eclipse Board of Directors had decided to close down until the sale of the bankrupt company's assets to new owner EclipseJet can be finalized. O'Connell termed the closing as very close, but added the process is taking much longer than first thought, blaming the current global financial crisis. As for the furloughed workers, McConnell said, quote, "We anticipate being able to call them back soon, but we made no promises. We're planning for the worst, but hoping for the best," unquote. Watch for updates at aero-news.net. A flight instructor and a student pilot are dead after the crash of their Cirrus SR-20 Tuesday in a wooded marsh in southern Volusia County near Deltona, Florida. The Orlando Sentinel reports 23-year-old Delta Connection Academy instructor Addie Atkinson and 30-year-old student pilot Derek Fox had taken off from Orlando Sanford International Airport in the two-year-old plane and were reported missing at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Tuesday. Investigators say the aircraft was on a VFR training flight, and radar records indicate it was in a spiral before contact was lost. A call came in to 911 from a witness reporting a plane had gone down in the area. Searchers located the wreckage on Wednesday morning. The airframe chute had been deployed, although investigators don't yet know whether that happened by pilot decision or as a result of crash forces. Delta Connection Academy says this is the first fatal training mishap in the 20 years the school has been in Sanford. A former head of the National Transportation Safety Board says all twin-engine turboprop airliners should be grounded immediately until investigators can find out what happened to Continental 3407 a week ago. Jim Hall was appointed board chairman by President Clinton in 1994 and left in 2001. The Toronto Star reports he believes turboprop airliners like the ATR 42 and 72 and the Bombardier Q400 may suffer from inherent safety issues in icing conditions due to their relatively low speeds and the use of pneumatic de-ice boots invented in the 1930s. The news comes as manufacturers and airlines battle public misconceptions that the planes are not as safe as jets. The Wall Street Journal also quoted the NTSB Wednesday in reporting that data from 3407 indicate the pilot manually overpowered the Q400's automatic stick pusher to pull the plane's nose up as stall warnings blared. The Star notes that Hall's recommendation would strand tens of thousands of passengers. The FAA says there are no plans to ground the fleet. These days, Hall has a consulting firm specializing in legislative affairs, crisis management, and transportation safety and security, according to his website, and works with a law firm specializing in aviation-related lawsuits. Sirius XM, which provides satellite radio subscription service to about 19 million subscribers and weather services to a growing number of pilots, has been saved from bankruptcy, for now. Last week, numerous media reported that preparations for a bankruptcy filing were underway as a Tuesday deadline loomed for repayment of a $175 million note. Dish Network Chairman Charles Ergen, who had bought up $350 million in Sirius XM debt, appeared to be positioning to take the company over. But the Washington Post reports Dish Network competitor Liberty Media, which owns DirecTV and the Discovery Channel, loaned Sirius XM $530 million in time to cover Tuesday's payment. That ended the immediate crisis and also covers much of another debt payment due in May. Sirius XM still must make a $400 million payment in December. The deal gives Liberty a 40% stake in Sirius XM, two immediate seats on the company's board of directors, with more seats coming if its ownership stake increases in the future. Coming up next, new full-body scanners debut at Tulsa International. Go Airlines has its first profitable quarter, and airline employment reaches its lowest level since 1993. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for February 19th. I'm Paul Plack. The Transportation Security Administration has begun testing of new millimeter wave imaging devices at Tulsa International Airport. The devices are full-body scanners, which, unlike metal detectors now in common use, can detect non-metallic weapons and explosive liquids and plastics. But they also create an image revealing enough to clearly show body parts, and privacy advocates are concerned. TSA plans to monitor the images from separate rooms away from the view of other passengers and promises to delete images immediately after screening. USA Today reports the test is also coming soon to airports in Albuquerque, Salt Lake City, Las Vegas, San Francisco, and Miami. Each full-body scanner costs $170,000, compared to $10,000 for the metal detectors. The screening process is also expected to take slightly longer, about 30 seconds using the scanner. Maybe we'll save that time back if we don't have to take our shoes off and put them on. Faced with a new administration and an economic recession, it appears the U.S. Air Force will quit fighting Pentagon planners and back off its insistence it needs another 200 F-22 Raptor fighters from Lockheed Martin. Bloomberg says Air Force Chief of Staff General Norton Schwartz confirmed the decision on Tuesday. The Pentagon allocated no money for more F-22s in the 2010 budget draft. Congress told the Air Force it might appropriate the money separately, but the service was given till March 1st to ask. While declining to specify exactly how many more Raptors the Air Force will seek, Schwartz left unchallenged an estimate of 60 offered in December by Admiral Michael Mullen, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. The F-22's price tag is $354 million a copy, if you include research and development costs. Bucking a stream of bad airline financials, Mesa Air Group announced on Wednesday a net income of $15.5 million in the first quarter of fiscal 2009, on operating revenues of $265.1 million. That compares to a net loss of $2.8 million in the first quarter of 2008. But what really stood out was the performance of Mesa's Go Airlines subsidiary. The Hawaiian inter-island carrier posted its first-ever profit in the first quarter. It was only $500,000, but that's news after almost 3 years of staggering losses. Mesa Chairman and CEO Jonathan Ornstein commented, quote, "We continue to execute our restructuring plan and take steps needed to improve the financial and operational performance of the company. While the environment continues to be challenging, we remain confident that working together, our company can build upon the success of this quarter," unquote. Aggressive loss leader pricing by Go is widely blamed for the demise of Aloha Airlines last March after 61 years in the market. In November 2007, a U.S. bankruptcy court ruled Mesa illegally used confidential information obtained from Hawaiian Airlines during its bankruptcy proceedings to launch Go Airlines and ordered Mesa to pay $80 million in damages. U.S. scheduled passenger airlines employed 6.7% fewer workers in December 2008 than in December of 2007. That's the sixth consecutive decrease in monthly levels compared to the previous year. December also recorded the largest year-to-year decrease since December of 2003. The Department of Transportation's Bureau of Transportation Statistics says December saw 391,918 full-time equivalent employees industry-wide. That's the lowest total since 1993. FTE calculations count two part-timers as one full-timer. You can find more detail on the report in the text version of this story at aero-news.net. Still ahead, that bright light in the Texas sky, completely harmless. NASA's slipping shuttle schedule threatens other delays. And the grandfather of the low-cost airline has gone west. You're listening to Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin Wass GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the soup, you gotta have an opener. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, February 19th. I'm Paul Platt. If you live in North Texas, you can take off your hard hat now. Officials say they're pretty sure the fireball seen over Austin and Dallas on Sunday was probably a rare meteor event and not debris from last week's satellite collision over Siberia. FAA spokesman Roland Herwig told the Associated Press the Sunday morning phenomenon was most likely a natural event and not any debris from a man-made object. That contradicted his earlier speculation about debris from the satellite collision. Preston Starr, the observatory manager at the University of North Texas in Denton, agreed. He guesses it would have taken a meteor about the size of a pickup truck to create that bright display. He says satellite scrap would have been on a different trajectory and, quote, it would have looked like a blip and nobody would be able to notice if it were a daytime entry, unquote. The FAA's Sunday morning notice to airmen, warning pilots in the area about possible additional falling satellite parts, was quickly retracted on Sunday afternoon. NASA officials have been saying that repeated delays of Discovery's next launch would not impact other missions. Well, now, Florida Today is disputing that prediction. NASA managers are scheduled to meet on Friday to discuss whether Discovery will be cleared for launch on February 27th. The mission to the International Space Station has been delayed three times by bugs in hydrogen flow valves. The paper reports the Orbiting Carbon Observatory, which is a sensitive instrument for monitoring greenhouse gases, has now had its launch from California's Vandenberg Air Force Base delayed by one day to February 24th and could be pushed back further if Discovery encounters more delays. And Discovery's planned March 13th landing could delay the launch of a military communications satellite scheduled for March 9th. NASA originally said it wanted Discovery back home before that mission launched. And the dominoes keep falling. If the military launch is delayed, that could leave inadequate turnaround time at the launch complex for the planned April 24th liftoff of NASA's Lunar Crater Observation and Sensing Satellite. And you thought your calendar was full. Despite a faltering economy which has impacted other aviation trade shows, the organizers of Healy Expo 2009 in Anaheim, California are optimistic. The show runs this Sunday through Tuesday. Helicopter Association International says this year's Healy Expo will feature a record 583 exhibitors, including 88 first-time exhibitors and 73 helicopters on the show floor. Among this year's highlights will be a job fair, with companies from around the world seeking to fill positions on the spot, and the annual Salute to Excellence Awards Banquet Monday night at 8 p.m. Online registration is still open. Find the link at the bottom of the text version of this story at aero-news.net. And if you can't make it, stick with ANN for daily updates. We'll be there. And finally, if you've ever crossed the Atlantic in a cramped airliner seat to take advantage of a Super Saver fare, your life was touched by Sigurdur Helgason. ANN has learned that the grandfather of the low-cost airline model passed away February 8th at the age of 87. His Loftleder Airlines, later called Icelandic, started budget airline flights from the U.S. to Scandinavia via Iceland in 1955. In the early 1960s, he started service to Luxembourg, where the absence of a national flag carrier at the time meant no protectionist regulations preventing Icelandic flights from landing there. Even after modern jets cut travel time between the U.S. and Europe, Icelandic kept flying cramped turboprops. By the end of the 1960s, the carrier graduated to a fleet of Douglas DC-8 turbojets, but held on to its slogan, "We're slow, but we're low." By the time of Woodstock, Icelandic had become known as the hippie airline, where the odd whiff of cannabis in the cabin was no big deal, and despite the cramped seats, the meals were lavish, and the booze was free. Today, the airline has lost much of that counterculture appeal, but it still carries 1.6 million passengers every year. It also holds the distinction of being the only low-cost airline of its era to have survived, proving that Sigurdur Helgason was not only ahead of his time, but managed to keep up with it. Local media report the deceased was interred with a gourmet dinner and a complimentary bottle of vintage cognac after being folded into a cramped, unvarnished pine box. That's the latest from AeroNews. Yes, I'm kidding. I hope his ghost has a sense of humor. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, we'll get a look ahead to next week's first meeting of the Society of Aviation and Flight Educators with former NAFI director and FAA executive Bob Wright. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.